Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Molly and Hall.
We're trying to wake Chicago up.
Live at 5 on 670 The Score.
And here they come.
He got Lucas Giolito on the bump tonight. And Giolito has won three consecutive starts for just the second time
His career.
Just the second time in his career.
Yeah.
Last out, he had the rain-shortened five-inning complete game victory. This is sort of one of these games where I'm not saying they have to win. I'm not saying they can win. I'm saying if they do.
See if they do.
We'll be talking tomorrow.
That's almost
about
what concerns me a little bit because
big move forward.
I'm not making the comparison to Yu Darvish, but in the same way that Yu Darvish kind of above the shoulders, that's the thing you worry about every fifth day is his mental approach. Lucas Giolito has changed his mental approach and attributed that change to some of his early success. So I hope he doesn't put too much weight on this one start.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall.
Good morning, Kyle Pater.
Mornings on The Score.
Two strikes from Lucas to Diaz, and he struck him out on a slider. Swing and a miss, strike three. That was a slider biting low, and Lucas has four strikeouts tonight. Swing and a miss, strike three, a second put-away slider in the inning, and Giolito's cruising six in a row. He blitzed him with a fastball.
That was a 96, as good a fastball as we've seen tonight.
Two and two from Giolito. Swing and a miss, strike three. Lucas has strikeout number nine. April 15th, 2016 is the last Sox complete game shutout. This is in the air, third base side. Moncada is underneath, and donuts are on Lucas. 4-0 Sox complete game shutout. For the transformed Lucas Giolito.
Mully Hall.
I'm so fired up.
Here we go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Wow. Wow, 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 Lucas Giolito.
Wow.
That is one hell of a performance. Best pitcher in Chicago? Someone has to ask.
Good morning, Molly. Happy Friday.
How are you, David?
Is he the best pitcher in Chicago? He is right now.
But he was last night.
He has been this season. I mean, when you look at the body of work right now, you could definitely say he could lay claim to that title.
He's hot.
He's hot. He's definitely very hot. Giolito threw a gem. It was great. We talked yesterday about not wanting to put too much on one start against the Astros in that environment, and whatever he did, he did it successfully. He's repeating his delivery. He's locked in mentally, and this is fun to watch.
That team doesn't lose at home. And to lose two consecutive games to the White Sox, who get a split in that series, against the best team in baseball is hugely impressive. A really great finish to that series from the Chicago White Sox. And got to tell you, you asked the question earlier in the week if they had thrown away a start. Who knows? Maybe if they had not suffered some injuries, maybe if they had a pitching staff, they'd have won that series.
Well, I think that you have to ask those questions, and I think they're fair to address, and I think you have to start to wonder where this team is headed. It's an interesting team. I don't know if they're better than they thought they would be. I don't know if they're more competitive at this point. You don't want to get carried away because, as the Twitter machine was reminding us last night, Altuve and Springer were out.
Yes.
And
no one said that the first two games.
Right. And the Astros looked like the Astros when they took the first two games. And you started to think, okay, are the Sox going to avoid a sweep here? And then they come back with two strong efforts, and Giolito pitching the way that he has gives you hope. And you see Dylan Cease at AAA last night. We went six innings, five hits, gave up one run. I wonder, should his next start be in a White Sox uniform? I know they keep hearing no. I know we keep hearing that it's too soon. You don't want to rush him. But you look at this team, and you see TBA on the schedule, and Manny Benuelos expected to possibly go on Saturday And it's a little deflating. And you think there's a lot to be excited about. And you wonder where this team headed and how much Cease could help.
I got to tell you, it's so much fun because we actually had a good laugh about the idea that Giolito had produced the first full game appearance by any Sox player in the rain-shortened five-inning game. And then he comes back and says that he was pounding the strike zone because he was trying to get that game won before the rain stopped it. And he learned something and he thought, why not do that now? And he was pounding the strike zone. He was throwing his fastball, and it was real. The velocity was great on it. He had he had everything going. The change we've seen all year long, that's going. He's got a curveball he's throwing. He's got a slider. The sequence of pitches was fantastic, and he's pounding strikes.
Well, getting back to the whole approach thing, when you going into the season, it was all about he talked about the mental approach and the off-season therapy he did and to fix his mindset. And then the rain-shortened start last time out kind of reminded him, just get the ball and throw.
That's it.
Just throw. And he threw 107 pitches, 82 for strikes, 9 strikeouts, only walked 1. Whatever he's doing is working. So keep it up.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And you know, some of those pitches that were balls started out in the strike zone and fooled people. He had 9 strikeouts in the game. I was utterly impressed that he managed to keep that going inning after inning and got himself out of a couple of bad spots. And the guy throws a shutout and, you know, he gives up a few hits. That's just a fantastic performance.
And let's face it, he throws a shutout. And what else makes it exciting is that when Eloy Jimenez homers in a game that they win, yeah, like that, you're like, and it was after they already had
right.
a lead.
They're up 3-0.
So it was an insurance run if you needed it. They didn't need it, but it was still fun to see Eloy come back. And after an 0-for-7 return, he's been hot the last 2 games. He's got 3 home runs and looks like he's starting to maybe feel more comfortable.
Now the Sox head to the Twins. They had 8 home runs in a sweep of the Angels. And so it's Ronaldo Lopez on the bump tonight, and they go in there, and it's obviously.
I'll be there. I got ticks.
You're going tonight?
Going tonight, baby.
Are you driving?
You pulled it off.
Hell yes. I'm driving up there after the show.
Love it.
Wow.
That's great.
You, Kevin. That's fantastic.
You have to.
How far a drive is that? Like 8 hours?
No, it's about 6.5.
Really?
It's not terrible.
Huh. When are you leaving?
After the show.
Like right after the show.
I can leave during the show if you'd like.
Is it snowing up there?
No, I don't think so. I'm going to take my ice skates just in case.
You're going to hit the Mall of America? Yeah.
Thinking about it.
Well, there's no state income tax. So that's one of the reasons you go to. That's one of the reasons.
It's big hockey territory, Kevin. You know that, right?
You
might actually run into some hockey parents at a gas station, you know, just in case you might want to talk the lingo.
I went there last year.
Yeah, right.
I went there last year, and you can go visit Prince's house. I went to Prince's house. It was open to the public. You have to pay to get in. There's apparently some battle royale going between members of his family. So it was like going to Graceland, only kind of different and
better.
Well, I don't know, man. I mean, you know how Elvis is buried by the cement pond? They have his ashes. They have a little room where he would watch basketball. It's like it's almost like a little diner inside his house, and his ashes are in like effectively a light fixture that's overhead. And it was so weird because they have a moment of silence with your tour group, and then the woman takes questions. And the first question was like, where did he die? Where did he die? And she's like, well, we don't talk about that. And I was like, I think it was on the second floor of the elevator, which is apparently what it was. But the group is talking about his death under his ashes. It was so surreal. It was really strange.
Can't wait to get there.
Just saying, it's a fun place to go to.
Was it as surreal as Tyler Chatwood, pinch hitter extraordinaire?
How about Tyler Chatwood? It's a pity that didn't work out because they fell behind early. John Lester struggling yesterday afternoon with the Chicago Cubs and falling into a hole. Let's be honest about it.
Yeah, there's a difference in mentality in terms of a series split. You don't feel as good about
That's
the Cubs
true.
Splitting with the Phillies as you do White Sox with the Astros. John Lester, you wonder, is this something he goes through every year? He sounded a little bit more concerned than maybe you expected. He wasn't dismissing it. He's been shaky the last 2 starts. The Cubs had an opportunity after falling down 7-0. And Chatty, you know, Mark Gonzalez reminded us in the Tribune, a scout told him that had Chatwood come out as a infielder, and he was a pretty good infielder in California in high school, he would have been like a sixth round pick. He can swing a bat.
Yeah.
He's a good athlete. Now, that's not why he's there, but
no, that's not why he's there.
He almost tied that game.
They ran out of players, is why he was there. So
they did run out of players.
That's what happens.
Wilson Contreras playing right field.
That, you know, when he went out there and he was like squinting into the sun right before Jason Hayward had one knocked over his head, I mean, I was just sitting there like, get him some sunglasses. And then immediately after the ball went over Hayward's head, they ran out and gave him some sunglasses. So at least he had sunglasses. But he looked like he couldn't see a thing.
He looked like he was going to struggle out there.
Yes.
Yeah, that was not a game that was fun to watch if you're a Cubs fan. I mean, they almost came back. It would have been a great comeback. But tough on many levels. John Lester struggled. A lot of moves, and you run out of players. Addison Russell with a really feeble at bat at the end. Jason Hayward breaks the bat over his knee.
Oh,
my gosh.
I know, but
talk about a split.
Get a hit, man. You know? You wouldn't be walking away, cracking your bat. And then they're like, oh, he's just like, what's his name? The former White Sox, my mind is shot.
Bo Jackson?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
No, he's not like Bo Jackson.
No, it's nothing like Bo Jackson.
No, that's not Bo Jackson.
That's not Bo Jackson.
That's not Bo Jackson in right field. No.
Oh, my God.
And now the Reds come to town for a series, and I think the Cubs will be happy to see the Reds after dealing with the Phillies.
Having said that, I mean, it's pretty cool that he can break that bat over his knee. I got a feeling I'd be in surgery.
I think most players can. I was, Coon was talking about the time, we'll have to ask him about it when we talk to him at 8 o'clock, the time when he did that, when he broke the bat over his knee and in a fit of frustration. I can't see Coom getting that frustrated, maybe, but
no,
he's an intense guy.
He's very intense, and I could see him snapping a bat with his bare hands. He's a big dude.
He didn't say who struck him out or what the circumstances were, but I kind of was curious because I don't envision Ron Coomer doing that.
Yeah, but you're right. It's very interesting because you have a different viewpoint of the Cubs splitting with the Phillies than you do of the White Sox splitting with Houston.
Yeah. It's, I mean, we're celebrating the White Sox.
Glorious split.
Hey, yeah. Wasn't that a great?
Woo, they could be 500.
They didn't get swept.
Yeah, it's totally different feel. The Bears wrapped up OTAs for the week, organized team activities, and also right as we were getting off the air, the list was released. The top 25 of the Dan and Don greatest Bears in history list, and I guess it was not without controversy. I thought it was okay. I didn't have a.
It's always going to be controversial. There's always going to be a difference of opinion. I thought Dan Pompey, he handled it well in explaining it in a column in the Athletic.
That was really well done.
This is a great source of debate. There are no really wrong answers. Everyone has a point of view, and I was surprised, I guess, by how many players from the past that we never saw play were in the top 10.
Hall of Famers?
Yeah, yeah.
They're in the Hall of Fame.
I know they're in the Hall of Fame. No,
it's a representative.
I'm telling my reaction, okay?
Ahead,
so I'm just telling you my reaction to seeing players that you are reminded how good they must have been because, I never saw Danny Fortman play. Yeah, he's 10th.
Number 10.
He's good on number 10. He's a guard. So an offensive lineman at number 10, a guy who I never saw play, it's going to raise my eyebrow a little bit. Everybody has recency bias. They have,
but it's probably half of the top 10 you never saw play, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I never saw Bronco Nagurski, Sid Luckman, Bill George, Bulldog Turner, Doug Atkins. That's
there are no members of the 85 Bears defense in the top 10. And so
that's why I thought Dan Hampton should have been higher. As representative of that 85 defense, which is generally regarded along with Baltimore, the greatest defenses ever in league history. And I'm partial to the Bears, so I take them. But it is a little surprising that he didn't get included in that. But Hampton over Richard Dent, no doubt about it. Jimbo Covert, Brian Urlacher, 14. A lot of people felt that was low, but again, Urlacher played like 5 minutes ago, right? So I would have thought
Urlacher was a little low. I thought Jay Cutler was low at 85. I would have probably included Refrigerator Perry in my top 100.
I don't understand that one at all. We'll have to talk about that because did he even ever make a Pro Bowl? I don't believe so. I mean, he actually had a career and was a play, but wasn't that a party trick? Wasn't that more of an argument between Ditka and Buddy Ryan?
Might have been. Yeah, when you're talking about the top 100 Bears, it's hard for me to imagine writing the history of the Bears without mentioning Refrigerator Perry's name. And if, you know, that's the way you want to look at it, that's one way to look at it. The thing about any list, especially one with 100 names on it, and the criteria is flexible for each person, is that you can make an argument that is plausible for a lot of guys. And so why is Mike Singletary at 15? Oh, I get that. But some people think he was higher, and some people would have put him. I talked to somebody yesterday, wouldn't have put him in the top 30.
Really? So,
yeah.
Wow. Is somebody who knows what they're talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Huh. That's interesting. Not in the top 30. I mean, that's rough.
I would have probably, top 20 sounds right. Devin Hester at 20 is interesting. Steve McMichael, the highest defensive tackle rated, and he's at 19. We're going to talk to our guy, Jay Hilgenberg. He comes in at number 18.
Yeah, I'd be very curious to get Hilgi's take. You know, I had the good fortune to go out to dinner once with Dan Hampton, and my brother was with me, and he was asking Hamp these questions like I'd never really considered before. Like, he asked him at one point, hey, did Walter Payton not work out with the rest of the team to create an aura of invincibility about himself? Like, he didn't like people to see it. I can't wait to ask that question of Jay. I'd be very curious to get his response, because Hamp said that he did work out with the team early in his career, but then
he stopped.
Then really started doing more stuff on his own and legendary stuff on his own in order to perhaps maintain that kind of distance, air of invincibility. Hmm. Yeah, very interesting.
That is interesting. Leslie Frazier also off the list, as a texter points out. That was interesting.
Yeah, I think Leslie Frazier belonged on the list.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair. 312-644-6767 is the number. We're going to get to all your calls a little later in the show, but next we have the 5 at 5. Oh, it's going to be a good one. Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
Eloy Jimenez homered again. Lucas Giolito pitched very well, and the White Sox split a four-game series on the road against an American League heavyweight. He is 500, an unrealistic goal if the Sox address their rotation concerns.
I think 500's a realistic goal, even if they don't address their rotation concerns. I think that they will, and they have to, and there'll be other people coming up and trying to do it, and eventually we'll see Dylan Cease before the year is out, but I think he will be more on the Michael Kopech schedule from a year ago, hopefully not including an injury. But it is really uplifting to see that kind of performance from Giolito. And as you mentioned, the home run from Jimenez, you know, another home
Mount
run from
Mount Eloy
him.
Erupts again.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I really, it's about player development. And what's neat is that it's not, you know, Moncada is playing really well. Tim Anderson is getting better. Now we got Eloy. You're starting to see it a little bit, right? He's had three homers in two games. And Lucas Giolito, that's a huge one. To see a pitcher develop a little bit here is huge. Hopefully, Ronaldo Lopez can make a similar type of jump before you get into next year. But, you know, it's about individual performance. And I was really, really uplifted by Giolito. And it's so nice to see a guy who's figuring something out, who's adjusted and is learning something. And we're watching it happen in front of our eyes. So God bless him. It's a nice thing to see. I don't know that 500 is realistic, but I'm going to say, let's get to 500. That would be a huge.
Why not? Jump. You know, I think that's the thing. If you ignore all the rhetoric about all this, you know, player development and individual progress and this and that, you look at the White Sox and they have been quietly competitive, and they have a shot if you You look at their young talent progressing, and Tim Anderson has the Adidas commercial. He's, you know, basically says the game's boring. Watch me change it. Well, the Sox can change the narrative, and they can now have the kind of season that maybe people expected them to. And that requires a different approach in terms of the mindset. And Dylan Cease, his next start should be in a Sox uniform. I understand the Super 2 status concerns. I understand not wanting to necessarily see him fail at the major league level. At the same time, I think you see what he's doing at AAA, and you see the need that does exist in your rotation. And I guess that it's a little bit frustrating to see the Sox trot out somebody who's going to be overmatched every fifth day when you have a team that's playing very well, better than expected. They're three games below 500, 23-26. We're hitting that Memorial Day milepost in the baseball season where you start to evaluate what you have, what you are, and what you're not. And the Sox are a team that have been sneaky good, but they're not going to continue to progress unless they address the rotations. I don't know if that's somebody, a free agent after the draft, because you don't have to worry about compensation. I don't know if that's a trade. I don't know if that's bringing up Cease. But you got to do something, because these players, you know, part of creating and rebuilding a team is creating a winning culture and getting them used to having good habits. And I think that they're 23-26, you start to look at the wild card standings and you start to think, well, you know, it's not crazy to think that they could be a 500 team. And if you're a 500 team, you're flirting with respectability and a little bit more than that.
Yeah, completely realistic to get to 500. I think that they can. I think that they will. And then I do think that, you know, you can get to 500. You can continue to stay on your player development plan. I mean, you're probably not going to catch the Twins in the division. You're already 10 back of them, and they seem legitimate 17 games over 500, although you will start to find out over the next three games where you kind of match up against the Twins. And, you know, even if they don't bring up Dylan Cease, and I think that would be a blast, I think, for the fans, especially if the Sox continue to win as they have been lately, you still have these two guys, Lucas Giolito and Reynaldo Lopez, to watch and enjoy their development, to continue to get them to peak. Giolito, man, now a 2.77 ERA after just having a ridiculously high ERA last year. Eloy Jimenez now with six home runs, maybe tighten up his defense a little bit. But, yeah, I think that you just continue with the plan as it is. And, yes, you can get to 500 probably within the next 2 weeks.
Well, first of all, I just have to say that watching Giolito last night was just a joy. I mean, you know.
Nice hat, buddy.
Thank you very much. You have a nice hat on as well today. you know, you could take your Trouts and your Bryants and your Harpers, and that's all great, and I love those guys as well. But I'll take a good pitching performance, I think, over almost anything. And you got that last night against a great team. Giolito's been on an absolute tear lately. I think that whatever he's tapped into in terms of the offseason stuff, mechanical stuff that he's been working on before the season and during the season. You mentioned the thing with the tempo that he was talking about last night after the game, Molly. Whatever it is, it's working. And the stuff has always been there. That's never been the question. It's been everything else but that. And now it's all coming together for him. He looks like he is, here to stay at the top of this rotation. As far as the rest of the rotation, it's where you come into a little bit of a snag. I mean, Lopez, for all of his upside, has been really inconsistent. Banuelos is a 4A guy. Nova got you a decent start, but there was a lot of luck in that game too the other night with the four double plays and the triple play as well. So for me, I don't see this as a 500 team, even when things are going well, even when they're able to score runs, even if you can get Giolito and Lopez out there two out of every 5 days. I mean, even if Cease comes up, which could be happening, his last two starts down in Charlotte, 98 pitches and then 102 pitches last night. They could be prepping him and trying to stretch the arm out a little bit, and I wouldn't mind that. I mean, I'd love it, in fact. Of course, I wouldn't mind it, but there will be growing pains with him as well. He's not going to come out and just be, you know, Jacob DeGrom from day one.
But he doesn't have to be.
He doesn't
That's
have
the thing.
To be. You're right.
I mean, you don't have to have a perfect pitcher when you bring him up from AAA. Everybody understands what he's going to be.
Yeah, and I think that guys develop, they will develop better and more quickly at the major league level. If the competition is steeper, you're going to get better more quickly. So I think that he'll be up, boy, I don't know, a month, 6 weeks. I mean, the sooner the better, because he's not going to be able to finish the season anyway. But I still think 500 is a little unrealistic with with some of the guys you're throwing out there rotation-wise. I mean, Kovey, Nova, like I said, these aren't exactly guys that instill a ton of confidence.
Kovey had a really good outing the last time.
He did, but it was Darvish-y. It was only like four innings, and you need a little bit more than that.
I get the fans wanting to be 500. I totally understand that. I can respect that. But I just, if they care to hear what I have to say, I'm sure they don't. It doesn't matter. What matters is what happened last night again, right? Giolito, we talked about, Giolito had another good start. That's awesome. Moncada had the RBI. Anderson had the RBI. Aloy had the home run. That's your guy.
Charlie Tilson scored a run. McCann is hitting. You might have found a couple of guys that could help you with the rebuild without knowing it.
That's true, but those four people, those four names that I named first, that's superfecta, if you will. Okay, that's the future. That's the future of this ball club that's at the major league level right now, and they're producing at the major league level right now. That's what should be exciting. That's where your eyes should be.
I think the only person that should answer those questions is him.
Did John Lester's outing fall under the concept of regression to the mean? Did performances of Lester and Cole Hamels against Philadelphia make you think about the preseason prediction of Baseball Prospectus?
Not really. I think you expected this a little bit from two guys who are over 30. And you know, Pecota is going to get a lot of attention because they set the bar pretty low, and they didn't expect much out of this rotation. But Lester historically does go through something like this almost every season. I don't know if the numbers match what they do in the last two starts, where he's given up, you know, 9 earned runs, 17 hits in his last 8 1/3 innings covering two starts. That's bad. John Lester has earned the benefit of the doubt. He's been, you know, he had a microscopic ERA at Wrigley Field before yesterday. Cole Hamels might be a little bit up and down. I don't know what to attribute that to. The last outing, it was against the Phillies. He has a funny stat against his former teams. He's terrible. I don't know if it gets inside his own head or whatever, but he was bad against the Rangers and he's bad against the Phillies, but he's been good overall. So I think these two guys have earned the benefit of the doubt. I'd rather have them in my rotation than out of my rotation. The Cubs do have depth behind them. So I don't know if it falls under the concept of regression to the mean or whatever. I think that John Lester is a pitcher in his, you know, mid-30s that has a lot of innings and a lot of experience, and he's going to figure out a way to be good again. And that is, you know, he's earned the benefit of the doubt. And Cole Hamels kind of falls under the same category. Maybe not as much. We haven't seen as much of him in Chicago. But I do think that both those guys are going to be more dependable and consistent than they are inconsistent.
You know, I thought Lester, in fairness, I thought he was pitching so well early that there was bound to be some kind of regression. I just didn't think that it would be as dramatic as the last couple of games. But I did think that it was coming in some form. The only thing about the Baseball Prospectus prediction that was true, and I didn't put a lot of stock in it then, and I still don't, but the reason they were looking at it, because there's a lot of age on that pitching staff, and I think the fact that in one series you saw the two 34-year-olds struggle a little bit, it kind of did harken back to that idea. I don't believe that it is it's something that has legs moving forward. But I do think that you had to go into this season thinking that there could be, you know, just a couple of issues with guys as they get to their age. Again, Lester is going to end up having another great year. He's a great pitcher. But he did sort of come back down to earth a little bit. He was just ungodly in the opening part of the season.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at his earned run average, John Lester, for his career, he's 347. Right now, even with the dud last night, the four innings, he's at 268 now. So, yeah, there is going to be some regression to the mean, although it seems like it's been pretty dramatic over the last couple of games. As David said, yeah, Lester has these, like, eye-openingly bad games, like a couple per year. And maybe he's just getting them out of the way now. You just, like, you're always on a high wire act, though, with a starting pitcher who is 35 years old because, you know, eventually he is going to lose it. I'm not saying it's going to happen this year or next year or even the following year.
I heard you say it.
Quote me, John Lester has lost it. But it's going to happen. It's going to happen eventually. Yeah, please take me out of context. I would, you know, hey, go ahead and
it's always been a dream to be quoted out of context.
Oh, it's a great thing. You know, that's the kind of thing that doesn't happen around here at the Score. That,
never once. People, never happened. Nobody would do it. No.
And by the way, Mark Grody, everybody,
hey!
Yeah!
Hey! Molly, I have to tell you, you're uplifted by Lucas Giolito. I'm uplifted by you.
Oh, thanks, Brody.
That's good morning.
Beautiful, man.
Yeah.
Thanks, Brody.
David, you too, but I haven't seen you yet this morning.
Fine, man.
Yeah, I mean, like, I ran into Molly, and there was a moment there.
Oh,
so.
There was a lot
I'm sorry,
of
you're done.
Yeah.
You are finished,
Kevin,
in this town.
Yeah, that's it. Was I even supposed to be here this morning?
No, yeah, we'll ask Shane about that one.
Yeah.
John Lester has not been good, and Mully, you're right, the last couple times out it has been kind of a dramatic shift from where he was before to where he was now. Now, that being said, of course, he wasn't going to have an ERA of 116 or 209 for the rest of the season. That's absolutely ridiculous. But, I mean, with him, and personally, I've been waiting for John Lester, or and I shouldn't say waiting, but I've been...
Quoting you!
No, no, don't do it. Oh. I've been expecting him to kind of fall off a cliff at some point, and he hasn't really done it over the past couple of years. So until he has an extended run, like he has a couple of poor starts in a row, if you see that over a month, over 6 weeks, then I would be more concerned about that. But I think, and this does go back to the Pecota thing a little bit, if you look at the age of these guys, I mean, with the bullpen and the state that it's in, you're going to be pressing these guys maybe a little bit more than you'd like to at times. I mean, Hamels really labored the other night just to get through those four innings with about 100 pitches, and you're going to need these guys to step up, and it's going to be interesting to see how some of the veterans, you know, handle that workload in August, in September, when, you know, at their age, you can lose it a little bit more quickly. So I'm not saying Lester's done, far from it. Cole Hamels is not done, but it's going to be very, very interesting to keep an eye on these two in particular, because they are the elder statesmen of the rotation, and see the workload and see how much wear and tear is on those arms come later in the season.
Well, if you're like me, you had to look up regression toward the mean this morning. I'll let the people in the cars do that when they stop driving. I won't read it to you because I want to get to Kevin.
Don't Google and drive.
Don't Google and drive. Listen to us and drive. That's the safest
texting
thing
is cool,
you can
though.
Do. Yeah. You know, when you slow down. What I'm worried about, I'm going to put an over-under at noon today that will have a tweet from Bruce Levine saying that John Lester is suffering from dead arm and is going on the 10-day... is it DL now or the IL?
Wow, you're saying he's going on the IL.
Well, that's what he did not sound very positive after the game.
Right.
We were texting amongst ourselves during that game yesterday, raining on the Cubs parade a little bit, and that's totally fine. They deserved it. You know, here's the other thing with Lester. Like, some of that stuff with Lester, especially after the comeback, you gotta man up a little bit. You gotta shirts in, jocks tight, socks tall it. Just because the defense has fallen apart behind you, and the defense fell apart behind him yesterday, that home run, okay, that was all because John Lester was pissed and he was taking his ball and going home. He couldn't get over the fact that this Calso couldn't get that done.
That wasn't an earned run because, as you say, there were a couple of errors behind him.
So that's the thing about him that drives me absolutely bananas. And I'm predicting that by the time we get back here on Tuesday morning, that John Lester will have been diagnosed with, air quotes, dead arm and missing the next couple starts.
And by the way, those home runs, they were not cheapies. They were not wind blown.
No.
No, they would have been out.
Lester
any
said
day.
As much.
The real Muto question. Homer was on Waveland, right?
Yeah.
That was a 456 or something. It was crazy. It
might have hit a bro
longest
in a
polo. Longest one of his career.
I don't quite get the question.
Was splitting with Philadelphia good enough? Should the Cubs have done better? And are you concerned with their 4-5 record over the last 9 games?
I think they should have done better in that series. I do. You know, I know that a couple of games there can go either way, but they were unlucky a little bit. It's not good enough. You would think at home that they'd be able to handle that team a little bit better, but they were up 2-1, and then they had a bit of a bad game, and they still came back anyway. I mean, there was a moment there in that game where you thought, my God, this is something else, and yet they had given up too much early, and as you say, Dustin, that the errors and then the response to that was disappointing. and we'll see where that ends up. But, yeah, you know, 4-5 in their last nine, they're not going to win every game and they're not going to win every series, but you kind of half expect them to. And they were on this kind of this great run, and then they kind of just, you know, mediocre. Not great, not really bad, but mediocre, and that's not them.
Yeah, but they're 29-19, so the expectations are high. This is a team that they're a check swing call away from having won 3 of 4 against the first place team in the East. And I don't think that you're happy with any split. You're never happy when you lose a game that you fall behind 7-0 with your ace, your de facto ace on the mound. But the Phillies are good too, and I have learned my lesson. I think we all have about underestimating the Cubs through these tough stretches. They're on a pace to win 98 games. So I still think they're a very good team. They could have probably done better. I think the first game could have gone their way as well. But again, at Memorial Day, you sort of like the weekend is when you sort of take stock. They could take 2 out of 3 from the Reds and be in really good shape in first place in the Central. And then everyone's saying when they wake up Monday morning, when they get back to work on Tuesday, boy, those Cubs responded to the urgency. And it's the same thing we've been saying the last month. So this happens in baseball. It wasn't necessarily good enough. They might have done better, but I'm not terribly concerned.
Yeah, I'm not concerned, but I think they should have done better in this series. Milwaukee's still right there at a game and a half back. You should have won the Jake Arrieta game. You also made the Phillies feel good about themselves. I mean, they come into Wrigley Field, and they looked at the Cubs as a measuring stick, and they walk out saying and thinking, all right, yeah, we can compete with the best of the best. And at this point, coming into this game, Philly is a totally and completely average team in just about every single category of their baseball life, whether it's starting, bullpen, hitting. There's no area that stands out. So, yeah, I mean, if we're setting the bar high for the Cubs, and as David said, they're on pace to win 98 games, and this was not good enough, in my opinion.
You'd prefer to win the series at home. You'd prefer to win every series at home. But I guess I think more of the Phillies than you do, Mark Grody. I think that they are a very good team. I think that they're going to be a team that will be around come playoff time. I think, you know, Philadelphia and Atlanta will both probably make the playoffs out of that NL East. So I don't know if I'd say I'm concerned about their record. I mean, it's 4-5 over the last 9 days. It's not the worst thing in the world. You're still in first place technically. And after they got the Reds this weekend, I'm very, very interested to see the Cubs and Astros Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week. Another measuring stick for the Cubs.
What do you mean technically in first place? Is there another way to be in first place?
Yeah, they're a game and a half. There's a cushion
because
there,
the
Kevo.
Brewers have played more games.
Okay.
Right? I think that's where Kevin's going. I hate to help Kevin out with the metrics.
Just asking.
Houston and St. Louis on their upcoming
the
road
Lou.
Trip.
The Lou, yes.
So they best eat against the Reds over the next 3 days.
They usually do.
Yep.
It's not good enough. You're frustrated, you know, the check swing. But I'm more frustrated about Lester. I didn't expect him to do what he did in the beginning, but I don't like seeing these consecutive games in a row. And as I predicted a question before, I'm going to stick to it. And I hope I'm wrong, but I think I'm right. That by Tuesday, we're going to hear that John Lester has dead arm and he's missing the next two starts.
I'm with you on that, by the way, Rhodes.
That's happened like 2 or 3 years
in
a row now, if
absolutely.
I think so.
And I actually wouldn't have a problem with it. I mean, it's still so early in the season. Like, get him right now instead of, like, August.
And with Montgomery and Chatwood being okay, right, I think you could survive it.
Yeah. They need Chatwood's bat in the lineup.
Yeah.
What about Cole Hamels? What's wrong with his arm?
Well, I'm gonna say nothing's wrong with his arm. I'm going to go back to what David mentioned, I think, in the opening. I don't know if it's first question or the opening segment of the show. I think there's just something between the ears with the facing of the old teams. Now, ask me that question again next week, right? Might be on to something. Answer. We might be, as it was put, regressing towards the mean.
Figure that out yet, Dustin?
I figured it out. I just didn't want to read it because we're time sensitive.
Say, come on in here. We could go over it if you'd like.
Is it possible that Hamels saw a reflection of himself and then was kind of shocked by his own handsomeness, which threw him off his game during his last start?
You mean the smile he saw between the ears?
Yeah. We could always just regress back to age, too.
If you're feeling bad about the Cubs, remember Houston lost 2 games to the White Sox. The Cubs had a split against a really good team in Philadelphia. And how about Gene Segura? How good was he in that series in Real Muto? They got a good team.
They're good. They are
and,
good.
And the White Sox, or the Astros got a split against the White Sox, so now all of a sudden it's George Springer and Altuve.
Yeah.
As if the lineup was just completely rotten without those two guys.
Well, I think that's a great question, and for us it's pretty easy.
What is the best thing about the Bears' 100 Best Players list by Dan and Don? Did they get it right, and what was the biggest head-scratcher?
Well, the best thing about it is that it created such a wide range of debate. That's what these things are supposed to do, and it's been a week-long exercise. I thought the Bears probably could have gotten 2 weeks out of this had they kind of staggered the release of the top 25 and then the second 25 to 50, et cetera. Did they get it right? They got it terribly wrong, and they got it perfectly right. They got it right because there was enough range and an opinion that they created this sort of discussion. So I don't believe that there's any wrong answers in this list. I think that that's why they got it right. These are two guys who are respected, so they've seen a lot of football. The Bears entrusted them to write the book on the franchise, the encyclopedia of Bears football the last 100 years. So they come at this with a lot of credibility, and I think that credibility means their opinion matters, and they can back it up. And if you can back up your opinion, you're not wrong. And I think that's what is a beautiful thing about, you know, these kind of discussions or arguments, because they're defensible positions. I didn't see any of these guys, a lot of these guys play. A lot of us never saw a lot of these guys play. So that's very difficult to have that kind of perspective on a top 10 list and all these Hall of Famers that were just kind of names to us. The biggest head scratchers to me, based on what I just said, are guys that I saw play that I thought would have been a little bit higher. I thought Brian Urlacher deserved to be probably in the top 10, at least higher than 14. I thought Jay Cutler was not the 85th best player in Bears history. I thought Refrigerator Perry should have been in the top 100. I understand why all those decisions were made, but I think that the other side of the argument is also worth hearing. So those are some head scratchers. It has been a fun week, and I applaud them for their efforts.
I think you're spot on, David. I think that the right two guys were doing the list. They're also very professional guys. You know what I mean? Just knowing both of them and having worked with Dan for so many years and having a great friendship with him and knowing Don Pearson and respecting him, watching him work for so many years, I think that both those guys are going to be total pros about it. Probably not something that they embrace doing. Wouldn't be something I want to do. I think if you and I, for instance, tried to put this list together, there would probably be a fist fight. It would be you beating me up, but I would definitely have strong opinions.
It's a hard job.
It's a really difficult thing to do. And it's, you know, are there guys you got to get on a table for? How do you go about it? I just think it's a difficult task, and the right people did it. There were some head scratchers for me. I'm not sure that I wouldn't have appreciated sort of a paragraph of explanation. You know, this is how we came about putting the list together. This, you know, we wanted to be representative. The head scratchers for me are the current Bears. All of the current Bears are head scratchers for me. And I'm not saying they're wrong. I just don't know how they put the grouping together, and I don't quite understand that. And then the other one, the one that really jumps out at me, is not having Dan Hampton in the top 10, and not having Dan Hampton higher on the list, because Dan Hampton was arguably the best player, or certainly could be the representative of the greatest defense ever assembled. So therefore, I would have him significantly higher on the list. At whose expense, you might add? Well, you know, again, I think it's a very difficult task to put it together because, you know, I got to see Peyton play. I saw Butkus play, certainly not live, but on tape. We used to watch tons of Butkus tape when I was a kid playing grammar school football at Tommy Moore. You know, don't know anything about Sid Luckman, but know that he holds all those records and won tons of championships. You know, I've had the pleasure of working with Gale Sayers and doing a couple of remotes with Gale Sayers, and you wouldn't believe the line of people that would be there during every break. You've never seen anything like it. He is just amazing talent as a player, ran, you know, like no one else, the Kansas Comet. He had this sort of loping stride. I have had the pleasure of the horrible discomfort of Walter Payton grabbing me in the rear end and reeling around ready to strike someone and seeing sweetness smiling at me. What the hell are you supposed to do when that guy, you know, gooses you? I don't know Bulldog Turner. It's just really a hard thing to put together. But the idea that Hampton, as representative of the 85 team, which has a ton of members on this list, and the only Super Bowl champion, that he's not in the top 10 is confounding to me.
Yeah.
Well, and he's 11th, so I'm picking Nit.
I'm right with you. I jotted it down here. I scribbled it. Dan Hampton, Brian Urlacher, both I think should be in the top 10. And I'm looking at that, like those, like Covert is 13, Dent is 12, Hampton is 11. I mean, I could make an argument for all three of those guys being in the top 10. I would take out the following: Danny Fortman and Bulldog Turner, because I don't know much about those two guys, and we are afraid of what we don't know. So I am those two guys, you guys are out, and you're not here to defend yourself. So I just put Brian Urlacher and Dan Hampton in the top 10.
Everybody knows Bulldog Turner was the 7th pick in the 1940 draft out of Hardin-Simmons University, Mark. And
oh,
you fancy yourself a Bears fan.
Yeah. Everyone with a Google machine.
Mr. Bear, I don't even know
I'm
what you're talking
fraud.
About. I didn't Google it. I'm still hung up on Cutler being so low on the list. It seems just not right. I know it was so long ago, and we've been through each rollout of the list every single day, and it's created a lot of discussion, which is the point of this thing. So I think they've achieved that, but I still can't get over Jay at number 85. And I think Hester probably should have been a little bit higher as well.
Well, the list is great because it's made you have an emotion, right? People get fired up about this stuff, good, bad, or indifferent. Not an easy job at all. Not an easy job.
Plus, we've gotten 10 minutes out of it.
Right. 10 minutes.
Listen,
segment,
could literally do the rest of the show on this list.
Seriously.
I mean, I can't even tell you how pumped up I am about this.
And with all due respect to Dan Fortman's family, okay, at 6 foot tall, at 6 foot tall back in the day, he was probably a beast playing guard, okay? But, you know, forget about me. David, you mentioned it. Molly, you didn't mention it exactly, but I've never heard Danny Fortman's name in my life.
Isn't he a regular guest on the show? Danny Fortman?
Before it was conceived, yes.
Vegas.
Yeah, Vegas
offensive
guy.
Does he do afternoons?
Yeah.
Dan Hampton needs to be... Dan Hampton needed to be in the top 10. I understand this
Danny
guy's
Parkins.
In the Hall of Fame.
Oh.
Chew it and do it. I have a problem with Refrigerator Perry not being on the list at all. Okay, listen.
We'll have to discuss that.
Because here's the thing. I kept bringing up the fridge when we got into like the 70s, and nobody said he shouldn't be on the list at all at that point.
Well, but
we all assumed.
He never even made a Pro Bowl.
I understand all that.
And you got 28 Hall of Famers.
I was expecting him to be in like the 70-ish range. But as we kept getting this list unveiled, nobody said anything until he wasn't in the top 25 shouldn't be on the list.
Yeah, I knew that when he wasn't in the top 20, when the top 25 hadn't come out, he wasn't going to be on that. There were too many Hall of Famers.
I mean, I don't want to disrespect anybody. Leslie Frazier, it's a four-year career. He might be the best defensive back in the history of the Bears, but it was a four-year career, and he exited like on the first play of the second quarter of the Super Bowl. I mean, it was 4 years. I don't know.
In fairness to the fridge, he is in the WWE Hall of Fame, along with such luminaries as Mr. T and Donald Trump. Wow.
I figured he was being punished because Ditka gave him the chance to have a touchdown in the Super Bowl and not Walter Payton. So now we're going to punish Fridge for that.
I don't think these two guys care about that. But
no, I don't either.
It's an interesting omission. It is.
What kind of question is that?
This segment brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz in the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. Very quickly, gentlemen, will Illinois beat the May 31st legislative deadline to legalize sports gambling in the state? And how big of a story is this?
It's a huge story because they got $200 million they're counting on in the budget. And no, they're not going to make this deadline. This is ridiculous. And the stuff they're arguing about is nonsensical. Get it done.
It's a big story if it passes. It's a bigger story if it doesn't because of what Governor Pritzker has counted on in terms of the budget. 200 million reasons why they need to get this done, but I don't have any optimism that they will. We're a week away from the deadline. The whole fight is between DraftKings and FanDuel, and so the so-called bad actor clause that they're including, they're finding a way to mess up a sure thing. That's unfortunate. We're talking to Sam Panayotovich at 6:20 about this because it is a big deal.
Won't happen. Big story, yes. Kevin?
Well, I'm Mr. Optimism, so I think they're going to get the deal done. It'll be some, you know, 11th hour type deal. They need the money, don't they, Mully? They need the money so badly. As bungled up as this state is legislatively, I think they are going to get this through somehow. And David, I agree with you. It's a huge story either way.
Huge, huge story. I don't think it gets done, and I can't wait for Sam to clear up all the questions that we all have.
He was down there yesterday, I believe, right?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, he's in Springfield, so...
All right, we'll be getting to that soon, and we got a lot to talk about, all of it. What do you think? 312-644-6767. We're talking Giolito. We're talking Lester. We're talking about the Cubs, where they're at right now, feeling good about it. We've got a lot of Danny Fortman conversation coming up. No, not really. And gambling, what do you think? 312-644-6767. It is... Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.